If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Recorded from locations that are not 30 Rockefeller Plaza, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with actor, writer, and comedian Kumail Nanjiani. But first, late night writer Karen Chi shares how she is celebrating Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Month.
May is the third month of America's coronavirus quarantine, and it's also Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. Here to talk about that is one of our writers, Karen Chi.
Hi, Seth. It's true. This month, we celebrate Americans of Asian and Pacific Islander heritage. But this year has been tough. With President Trump calling COVID-19 the Chinese virus and news outlets almost exclusively using photos of Asians in their pandemic articles, there's been a surge in anti-Asian racism. Being Asian in America can feel pretty scary right now. So in light of that, I wanted to share the ways that I'm celebrating our heritage this month. Number one, be grateful. I'm grateful for my health, for my home, and for the man on the street who yelled, "Go back to Korea!" at me. South Korea has done a much better job handling the coronavirus than the US, and I would be much safer if I went there. So really, that man was wishing me good health. Thank you, kind sir. May you also go to Korea. Number two, support my local Asian-owned businesses. A lot of Asian restaurants and stores are struggling right now because of both the coronavirus and the added racism, so it's essential to shop there whenever I can. Plus, let's be honest, Whole Foods is not going to have my dried squid snacks. Number three, defy stereotypes. A lot of people make assumptions about me before they get to know me, specifically that I'll be entitled, rude, and white, just because my name is Karen. So I'm defying stereotypes just by being Asian. And also by not asking to speak to your manager. Number four, keep in touch with my family. I call my parents every day, and thanks to them, I'm able to thrive indoors. In fact, I don't long for the outdoors at all. Growing up, when I asked my immigrant parents to go camping, they were like, "Why? We have a house. Why would we pretend to be homeless?" And that prepared me well for life in quarantine. Number five, celebrate our community. During this time, it's important to reach out to other members of the Asian Pacific American community, even people you may not know that well, and who are very hot, like actor John Cho. I'm spending this month tweeting at him, "Hi, John Cho, you are very hot." And you might say, "Karen, that doesn't sound like you're celebrating Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. That just sounds like you're trying to hit on John Cho." And you would be right. Number six. Be patient. Quarantine is lasting a long time, but I'm not worried. When it ends, I will look exactly the same as I did when it started, because Asians look young forever. Everyone at Late Night thinks I'm 25, but actually, I'm 50 years old. So relax, stay inside, and we'll celebrate in person when the pandemic is over, after it probably gets solved by an Asian doctor who my mom will want me to marry.
Karen Chi, everyone. We'll be right back with Kumail Nanjiani.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Our guest tonight is an Oscar-nominated writer and Emmy-nominated actor you know from The Big Sick and Silicon Valley. He stars in The Lovebirds, which is available on Netflix Friday. Please welcome back to the show our friend Kumail Nanjiani.
Welcome back to the show, Kumail. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing very as well as can be expected. It's a little trite now, but I do have to ask how your quarantine's going and are you staying active?
My quarantine's, you know, back when you used to have good and bad days?
Yeah.
Now I feel like I have all kinds of days every single day.
Yeah, that's a nice way of thinking about it. It's all your days.
All the days are all the days. It's like, you know, was it, you're from Chicago, where people be like, you know, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. That's how I feel about my mood now.
Yeah, that's a good... It's Chicago weather all the time. Have you picked up any new skills in your time at home?
Yeah, I've been noodling on my guitar a little bit. Do you see the...
That's really nice, man. That's a good one. I don't know a ton about guitars, but that looks like a real good one.
Yeah, it's a really... you know, I just... I thought, you know, I would get like... you know, learn a new skill, pick something up, something like that. No, I have defiantly made a decision not to learn anything new or attempt to learn anything new. I feel like a lot of people are like, this is time, you know, I'm going to learn to play the guitar or I'm going to lose weight or whatever it is. And I've really been like, I don't want to like suck at something new. I just want to stay in my wheelhouse. I want to do stuff that makes me feel confident. I am not trying anything new. I've not even tried any new like recipes.
Think that's terrible. I don't think that's a terrible idea. And I will say the only thing I tried to learn is how to make a better meatball, and I feel I'm doing pretty good. But I think that's a very low bar.
And what do you, I will say that when you say meatball, in my head, I'm like, that seems pretty easy. Take some meat, make a ball. Like, how hard could it be? So what tricks have you learned? What did you not know that you now know?
We had some guys from the meatball shop, which is a very good meatball restaurant in New York City, on our show once, and they gave me a meatball cookbook that I never once even thought about looking at. And then this happened, and I opened it up, and it turns out there's a lot of different, you know, lamb meatballs, you know, meat. Obviously, I don't need to tell you that. You're a smart guy. Chicken meatballs.
You mean like beef balls?
Like beef balls. The classic.
Yeah, classic beef ball.
Just the classic beef balls. But you know, a lot of different sauces, you know, putting eggs and breadcrumb in there, and you know, it's been nice. And it's nice to have a good like under an hour task. I think that's a good window.
Right. I will say I started to make pancakes and I didn't really used to make pancakes, and now I've gotten so good that it's like too quick now.
Yeah.
Need something that takes a little bit longer.
That's true, right? Once you mastering pancakes like that, when this is over, nobody's gonna want to hear you bragging about how you mastered pancakes.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be like, you didn't know how to do pancakes before the quarantine.
I know you and your wife Emily, you guys collaborate a great deal. Has it been nice, obviously, to be stuck with a collaborator? Have you guys been efficient in working through this time?
It's honestly, you know, again, it sort of varies. In the beginning, it was like really, really good. I felt like, you know, I had like stuff that I'd been meaning to write that suddenly I had time to write I mean, honestly, there was a lot of anxiety and worry, but I felt like privileged enough that I was in a position where I could be like, okay, I could just stay at home and write. And then it's gotten a little bit harder since then. You know what's hard is writing like silly stuff, you know? So like when you're writing the story stuff, all that stuff is fine. It's just when you're like, I need to think of something silly, and you're like, all I can think of is like, hey, how about a global pandemic? You're like, no, that doesn't feel silly enough.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It is amazing how much I underestimated just what you, just by being out in the world, the threads of ideas you pick up, not even realizing it. And then when you don't have the world to sort of echo ideas off, like you just get stuck in a loop to some degree creatively.
That's exactly right. And it also I've noticed it in my dreams. My dreams now are just amalgamations of movies I've watched. It's not real life stuff. It's just like whatever, it'll be like a scene from this show, a scene from this movie, and then I'm in it. Like my brain is really, the subconscious is really phoning it in when it comes to dreams.
Well, you do, Emily was a therapist for years. Is it helpful in this time to have a live-in therapist you trust?
It is very helpful. It is, because I certainly have like a lot of stuff going on that I never had going on. We all do, so it's really good. She really has like good strategies for it. But then sometimes it's a little like I'll get upset at people who, not to get too political, but people who think that this scientific disease is a hoax, not real.
Sure, sure.
So I'll be like railing against them, and then she'll be like, but you know, I mean, look at things from their perspective. Maybe it's, and I'm like, I don't want to, it's like infuriating how empathetic she is. I'm like, just let me demonize these people. Let me have this. She's like, no, really, it's fear. Like, how do you wrap your head around? I'm like, okay, just stop.
Yeah. That's the thing, because you're not an actual client. She's not dependent on you actually paying for her therapy skills, that she can actually just be fully honest and tell you you have to think about other people.
I'll tell you, you know how things are a blessing and a curse? It's a curse and a curse.
Classic double curse.
Classic double curse.
We'll be right back with more Kumail right after this. We're back with Kumail Nanjiani. You participated in a virtual graduation that had, among other participants, former President Obama and LeBron James. How did that come to pass for you?
I just got an email and they were like, hey, LeBron and Obama are doing this graduation event. Do you want to do it? And I was like, let me think about it. I was like, yeah, of course. Of course. But you know, it's kind of sad because, like, if it's a real life thing, you get to meet LeBron and Obama. Yeah. But virtually, you know, I just recorded a bunch of stuff and I sent in a ton of jokes and Obama took them up. I have to assume it was directly Obama or LeBron, one of their decisions.
That they're real both hands on as far as editing down the comedy, you think?
I really editing down the comedy. Yeah, they really were like, hey, we really are looking for something much more sincere than you riffing about Animal Crossing, a game that you don't play.
I was lucky enough to be at SNL when LeBron hosted, and I've interacted with President Obama a couple times. Frustratingly funny people.
I know. So I have not met LeBron, but I did meet Obama once, and he was like, he said something, and he was like, really funny. And I was like, oh, you have this too? It's the only thing I have. You also have is like your 15th best thing. It's really, really frustrating. And then he said something funny and I laughed and he's like, I'm a funny guy. No, really, I am a funny guy. And even that was charming. Infuriating. Infuriating. You worked on him with the for the White House press correspondence thing.
I mean, we didn't we shared a bill.
And, right. That was the one where he made fun of Trump. Wines.
Yeah, we both told a few jokes about him, and though we got in the last word. A lot of people say that was the last word on Donald Trump.
Yeah, a lot of people say you guys really buried him. He'll never come back from that. So, do you feel partially responsible for?
I feel. I don't want to go inside the mind of the guy who decided to run for president. If that was why, but if that was why, I would feel partially responsible.
Oh wow, that was a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. I think if you weigh the two, it feels like he'd much rather show up Barack Obama than show up me.
Right. I don't think him winning the presidency was a way to spite you.
Yeah.
It might have been to spite Obama.
Yes. So I will say that I was more like present at the crime scene. I maybe like, you know.
Right.
Like for aiding and abetting more than the actual crime itself.
Right. If he had set his mind to becoming a great talk show host, then that would be a role.
Right. Yeah. And that might very well be his next chapter.
God, I hope so.
It would be bad.
Next year.
I would look forward to that too.
I have a question. What's that little door back there? Is that where you keep your troll people?
Yeah, we have those are the troll people there. And then those are what's slightly larger than a troll?
Ogre?
It's an ogre, I guess, would be, yeah. A hobbit's smaller than a troll, right? We established that from the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, hobbits are small.
Yeah. I mean, you would know, right? Would you know? I don't know. Are you do you like those films?
I would know. I've watched those films. Listen, I feel like you're stereotyping me. However, the problem is you are accurate. So
you did. I mean, I want to bring it up because you broke free of your own stereotype recently. Now, right in the beginning, played into the stereotype. You got cast in a Marvel project, The Eternals. That's very much in line with what we expect from Kumail. I remember once seeing you do stand-up comedy in the basement of a comic book store. All of that track.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got in like super comic book shape. And that was, I think, where you diverged from what we knew and expected of Kumail.
To be sincere, I was like, so they asked me to play a superhero in this thing. And my first thought was, my God, I can't believe this is happening. Second thought was, I have to now get in shape. Because it was important to me because I was the first like Pakistani superhero, like in a mainstream Hollywood movie, in a Marvel movie. I was like, I want to look like somebody who can like hang with Thor and Captain America. You know, I didn't want to like also be the first schlubby superhero. Like I just wanted to break one barrier. I didn't want to break all of the barriers.
Right.
So I was like, and I think that's a valid and valuable barrier to break. It's for somebody else, not for me. So that's why I sort of was like, all right, I have to really, really do this. You know what sucks about it is there was no like secret to it, you know? It just was when it was like, if I had done this when I was 21, I would have looked like this for most of my life and it would have been way easier to achieve. How different would everything have been? Emily did say she, you know, it was, this transformation was hard for me, but it was harder for Emily. I definitely became like 30% less interesting, but I think it's a fair trade.
we had Issa Rae on this week talking about The Lovebirds. This is a film where you guys play a couple going through some tough times and you get framed for murder. You filmed it in New Orleans. And she was talking about it was nice to be a woman on a film set who was co-starring with a man who were both thinking about what they were eating. But I realize now, both of you having to be thinking about it in New Orleans, a city known for its food, was it extra hard?
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible. Everything is like delicious and deep fried, you know? It's it was really... You know what I did? I just didn't eat it. I never even tried it. Like people would be like, you can just one day just try this food. You have to. And I was like, I'll make another trip out. I didn't have one beignet, you know. I was like, if I have one, then I know what I'm missing. If I don't go there and just stick to my awful protein shakes and protein bars. You know, in the beginning when I started having protein shakes, I was like, this isn't so bad. And now I'm a year and a half in, I'm like, this tastes like hot vomit.
You get kicked by a horse in the film, not a real horse, but a real horse with a rubber leg. Is this true?
Well, so there was a real horse and, you know, we didn't get to, that scene took a long time. So the horse kind of had to wait, like the horse waited like 3 extra days. And I could tell the horse was a little like, come on, guys, I'm a horse. Like, sorry, I shouldn't swear. He's like, I'm a horse. Don't make me wait. I'm a horse. It was weird. You'd just be sitting there waiting to shoot the scene, and you look over and by craft services, there's a horse. There's like a horse there. Like, he was in our space. The horse didn't have his own trailer. He would actually have a trailer. So, but we filmed it so that when I actually get kicked, you know, it's an actual, like, a very realistic rubber, just the leg of a horse, which is much more disturbing than a horse. Like, if you're walking down the street, what's worse? You see a horse or you see just the leg of a horse?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you think you have a better chance of getting away from a solitary leg.
If it's just the leg of a horse and it's moving, two things. One, you will get away. Two, your world is now different.
It's very exciting to see you and Issa together. I've been fans of you both for a really long time. The movie's great. And thank you so much, Kamal. It's so nice to talk to you. And thanks for making us the time.
Thanks for having me, man. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you soon.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.